I was fortunate to play at a very good basketball school. And then you go away and coach and you think that, you know, if I ever had the chance to coach here at Maryland, it'd be great. But I never thought I'd have the opportunity to come back and coach at Maryland.
Trimble with 3 seconds. Trimble for the win!
A sellout crowd of 43,000 cheers Queen Elizabeth and her consort Prince Philip. Very special guests of the University of Maryland.
90 seconds to go. Vasquez for three in the lead. 78-77 Maryland.
I believe that the terrapin is the loveliest, perhaps the most beautiful of all trees.
There's Wells to jump out, make the deck, and slam it. Yikes. Brown will take it inside the five. Touchdown, Maryland. Terrapins beat Virginia Tech.
And no handshake for the coin toss from Maryland before the game today. It is on.
Okay, grab shell, dude.
Right. And breaking free for the touchdown is Jay Sean Jones on his first touch as a Terp.
You're listening to Inside Maryland Sports Radio.
The Terps got a visit from the ghosts of out-of-conference road games past on a bleak Saturday night in Ohio. I know I had visions of Michael Turner bursting through the Maryland defense many years ago in DeKalb, and visions of some dudes I don't remember from Middle Tennessee State overrunning the Terps like they were the Germans plowing through the Ardennes in 1940. By halftime, Maryland was outgained and outplayed Bowling Green, but had the discipline of yours truly in a strip club with a stack of ones and found themselves down 14-10. Not sure what Matt Canada said at halftime, but whatever he did was more important. Terps gave the ball to their stable of halfbacks and ran their way to a 45-14 win and a giant sigh of relief for Maryland fans everywhere. Tell me I'm not the only one who was a wee bit worried at halftime, fellas.
No, I mean, it looked like one of those classic games that you go in and just shoot yourself in the foot all night against a team that's, you know, at home and desperate. And I think that's what's most impressive about it, though, is not that they won against a team that's really not very good or racked up all those rushing yards, which is a good sign. But again, they were physically dominant against Bowling Green. But more so just how they came back in the second half. That's a sign of a good team that can do that on the road after you've given that team a sense of life and that they have a chance to win the game. And to turn it around and win going away like that is something that good teams do. So that's the biggest takeaway to me.
It just seems like this is the type of scenario that you always walk into when you're in one of those early season road games against a team that you know isn't particularly good. They're coming off a huge emotional win on against Texas after all the drama from the offseason, and then they just literally trip all over themselves in the first half. What was it, 9 penalties in the first half, I believe, Josh?
Yeah, 9, and then I think 14 total.
That's insane. And I believe that it was close. I thought that for a minute that they were going to finish the half where there were more yards for penalties by Maryland than offensive yards by Bowling Green. But I think Bowling Green might have beat that out at the end.
Yeah, I mean, after that first game, they only had, I think, 48 yards, 46, something like that in penalty yards against Texas. And now they're, I think, first in the conference in penalties just from that game. And there were a couple of phantom calls in there too, but that was just really undisciplined first half.
And yeah, the funny thing is you kind of would expect that in the first game with Canada's offense, the new offense, all the pre-snap motions and everything like that. And that didn't happen in the first game. And then just against Bowling Green, it was just like Jeff said, a lack of focus. And some of the calls as well, some of them were just ticky-tacky and a little ridiculous. And Bowling Green seemed to get a lot of home calls as well.
Yeah, but I think you can also attribute a lot of the offensive line penalties and just the mishaps in that first half to, you know, a lot of guys coming in and out. You know, Derwin Gray's, this is his first weekend, and then you have Johnny Jordan who just made his first career start last week. Brendan Moore's moving to a new position. So I think, you know, I think it was a little bit excessive, but I think it's understandable to expect a little bit of growing pains.
How'd Derwin Gray look? I didn't really zoom in on him.
To me, he didn't really stand out. He didn't look bad. I thought Kasim Hill did have a good amount of time throughout the game. He just didn't really make his throws. But nothing really stood out to me. But he played all right.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say, just as a group, the offensive line was, you know, okay in the second half, though. Maryland ended up rushing for over 400 yards, which is just such a silly number to think of. And then they come in the last drive with their twos on the offensive line with Javon Leak back there and Pegram at quarterback. And then they just hammer him for another touchdown that almost felt unfair.
Yeah, I mean, the running backs, I think even in the first half, I think the biggest thing to me was, you know, even though the offense doesn't look good, Lorenzo Harrison's a guy that, you know, he really stepped up and he had a touch. He actually had a touchdown in the first half, but he got called back due to, I believe it was a chop block.
The mystery chop block.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, second half, I mean, they really took off. You got to see Maryland's depth. Teyon Fleet Davis finished with over 100 yards, two touchdowns in his second career game. Ty Johnson only had 12 carries but finished with the most yards on the team with the touchdown. Again, I mean, they averaged nearly 9 yards a carry, 444 yards on 53 carries, you know, going into this week. Establishing the run was a big point of emphasis. I think Maryland – More than proved just that, but yeah, it just shows that the running back unit is so deep.
After they punted the first drive of the second half, they scored 5 straight touchdowns, and 2 of those they did nothing but run the ball. They were each at least 3 plays, and there was another drive where Anthony McFarland caught a wheel route, which. It was basically caught the defense sleeping because they were all cheating up. And then the next 5 plays after, they ran the ball 5 straight times into the end zone again. So Bowling Green just couldn't stop it.
And that McFarland catch actually made him the top receiver in terms of receiving yards on Saturday. It was a big momentum swing for the Terps.
Ahmed, can I get an update on the Ant McFarland, Ahmed is happy or unhappy with the way he's being used scale?
Yeah. I mean, he's still learning. I thought he made
very pissed off last week, like shockingly. Yeah, I mean, so I want to go back to this.
Walt Bell's gone. He's got to direct his anger at somebody.
That's
else.
Right.
No, I mean, I think he's got a chance to see McFarland just kind of open it up more a little bit for him. I thought he did a good job. Obviously, the wheel route, that was something that you really want to see out of him. I think he got a couple snaps at jet sweep. I believe it was 2. But yeah, I mean, it's going to take time with him, you know, but he definitely showed off that explosiveness.
Canada's kind of saving him a bit too, to catch some teams by surprise, not showing his full hand yet.
Yeah.
What about Teyon Fleet Davis? Like, who had that guy being like your most productive running? Probably not most productive. I haven't looked at the cumulative stats. Maybe he's second behind Ty Johnson, but either way, that dude is a tank. I mean, he is a grown ass man as a redshirt freshman. Who knows if he'll be able to keep this up in Big Ten play when he can't power through as many guys, but he's been maybe the biggest surprise out of anybody.
And for a guy coming out of high school who a lot of people said he could transition to linebacker because he wasn't a natural runner, he's proved a lot of people wrong.
Yeah, I was going to say, the guy that I was convinced was going to be our starting middle linebacker in 2 years, that guy? Yeah, he's pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. No, he's impressed. I mean, he's just a really physical runner, and I think he's just really refined his technique from what I got to see in his senior year to what I'm seeing now. He looks like he really stepped it up.
Yeah, he has 1 less carry than Johnson and second on the team in rushing yards as well. And now with Funk out, and it sounds like he might be out for at least a couple of weeks. I mean, he was already the clear starter at H-back, but he's just going to get more reps there now.
Can Funk play linebacker?
It doesn't have to worry about getting caught from behind.
Exactly.
All right, guys, let's reset the table here a bit. The entire IMS crew is here. This is IMS Radio. Inside Maryland Sports publisher Jeff Ehrman is here. Beat reporters Josh Stern and Ahmed Ghafir is here. Producer Swink is here, back from his bachelor party, believe it or not. We will get into that later. And I am Paul Douglas, your host. Obviously, it's a big win over Bowling Green, 45-14, a total just decimation of a not particularly great football program on their field on Saturday night. Jeff, big picture, what does this mean to the program and to the season so far?
You know, big picture, it's a game you're supposed to win. Obviously, they're 14-point favorites. Again, I think the biggest takeaway is that they were able to just dominate in the second half after that rough start. You know, you see other teams. Look at North Carolina. They got off to a bad start. At East Carolina, I think they were probably 30-point favorites or something. They lost. You know, you have a lot of teams – losing games like that when you start off that poorly. So that kind of showed their progression, I think, as a team. But, you know, overall, it's still Bowling Green. They're not very good. This week's not going to tell us that much either against Temple. And then you get progressively more more important in the next few weeks, Minnesota and Michigan. So right now, I mean, it's really hard to see how they don't get off to a 4-0 start. Minnesota's quarterback situation obviously is sketchy. They have a walk-on true freshman starting. I think they lost Rodney Smith, their star running back, for the rest of the season. So Maryland should be favored there. And you go play Michigan, all bets are off. You know, that's going to be obviously a really tough one to win. But anybody who took the over on that, what was the total team wins total? 4 wins in Vegas this year?
Yeah, I think so.
Start counting your money.
Oh, man. Schwenk, make sure you go ahead and mark that statement for 2 months from now.
That's fine. Just, I'm confident.
For Ohio State week.
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't tempt fate like that if I were you, given what's happened to this program the last couple of years with injuries and whatnot. But, you know, on the surface, I think that's right. And even though the competition was bad, given the way the game went, do you feel like we learned anything about this team this week, Jeff?
I mean, I think we learned they can be a dominant rushing team. You know, that first game against Texas, they didn't run the ball well at all. They just relied on a few big plays and the defense. So whether that translates against better teams in Bowling Green, we'll see. But even against these pushover teams, they weren't rushing for 400 yards anytime in recent years. So, I mean, again, that's the biggest takeaway, is that this backfield, and we've said it before, I think is arguably the best at Maryland since who knows when. I mean, the only comparison I can think of is Bruce Perry and Josh Allen, who were good, but that's only two guys, you know. So they're loaded back there. They just need to, you know, get the passing game going too.
Yeah, I think we'll get into that a little bit later, but that maybe the first time we've seen Kasim Hill really struggle a little bit. Josh, this coaching staff has really been tested in multiple ways already this year, with obviously all the stuff that went on during the summer, coming to a really emotional game against Texas, pulling that off, and then showing up in Bowling Green and basically just shitting the bed, discipline-wise, and especially in the first half. You know, what can you say about how the coaching staff has done to deal with this type of adversity so far?
I think a lot of that is the mistakes against Bowling Green. I think a lot of that's kind of was to be expected, or at least it's not that surprising. I mean, when you have such an emotional win against Texas, and if you want to give the credit to the coaching staff for the way the team came out fired up against that game, I mean, I wouldn't give the coaching staff necessarily credit in that scenario, because that was more circumstantial. I think that same can be said with the Bowling Green game, just the opposite. But I mean, overall, the way we've seen the coaching staff, especially on defense, make adjustments during the game, and then Canada not getting too cute on offense, those were two kind of complaints of the coordinators last year. You know, Boo not making adjustments all the time, and Bill maybe trying to get a little too cute at times. So against Bowling Green, you saw Canada just in the second quarter after Pigrone fumbled, he decided to get the offense in the power formation and just – basically just ran it down Bowling Green's throat the rest of the game, kept it simple. That really seemed to be the game plan from the start, but I think because of the absurd amount of penalties Maryland had, they had to operate behind the sticks too many times in the first two quarters. And then the defense once again was very stout. After halftime, it only allowed 2 first downs and 33 yards. I think the one thing you could nitpick is when they play prevent defense at the end of the half. I don't know if you do that against an up-tempo team like Bowling Green, you know, with more than a minute left on the clock, when you have such a strong secondary, and that really was the only time Bowling Green moved the ball against the defense outside of the second possession when Cowart was called for that 15-yard face mask and Marcus Lewis had some trouble in coverage. So, I mean, overall, again, I think the coaching staff's handled the McNair situation well. I think they've handled everything pretty well, both in on and off the field. And, you know, so far, so good.
Yeah, it was interesting with the running game because I was counting for a while there. I think four drives in the first half, Maryland started with like a 15, 20-yard plus run, and only one of them they actually scored on because of all the penalties and stuff. It was just a really crazy game statistics-wise. Ahmed, when you've got all these running backs, you could think of worse problems to have, right? But it's going to be an issue for Maryland trying to keep all those guys happy and utilize them the best that they can. How do you feel like they do that going forward here?
I think the injury for Jake Bunk, obviously, you know, that opens up for Teyon Fleet-Davis. But I think you're going to have to find a lot of formations with a lot of two running backs, and you have to make it known that, you know, both are viable threats. I mean, if Ty Johnson is on the field, you know, you can't get handed off to Ty Johnson every single time. You got to be able to use that depth. Javon Leak is a guy that has the size to bounce inside and then go outside. I really like his game, and I'm a little bit surprised that he's not getting a little bit more run. And, you know, Anthony McFarland's a guy that he can kind of maybe motion out to maybe like a slot receiver or just stay in the backfield and pose the threat in the passing attack. Having him on the field with maybe Ty Johnson, you know, you don't know how Ty Johnson is going to run it up the middle, or you can have Anthony McFarland on the sideline. So, again, they have a lot of options, but so far, I mean, again, I don't think that you've seen Matt Canada really open up his playbook the entire way. And again, you know, they're still another 2 weeks away from conference play, and I think that's exactly why Canada is being a little bit more conservative with his offense. So we'll see what happens when conference play starts. But obviously, it's good to see Lorenzo Harrison pick it up as well. You know, the question is, is he going to be 100% healthy moving forward? What's his situation, and how do you get him more carries? But so far, I thought on Saturday, you got a really good chance to see the full depth.
Yeah, Matt, it's interesting to me because so many of those guys have unique skill sets in a way that you could almost tailor your running plays towards each back, right? You know, you've got Leak and Ty Johnson, I guess, are the most similar. They're kind of, you know, one cut and go guys. You've got Lorenzo, who's so tiny, you can hide him behind the line, run draw plays, you know, kind of those inside traps and stuff to get him just that little bit of space that he can squeeze through. McFarland is the crazy athlete who gets on the outside and turns a corner better than any of them. And then Fleet Davis, who just seems to bounce off three guys before you even have a chance to get him down.
Yeah. You know, I just think, you know, Anthony McFarland is really going to be the guy that just separates this offense and can really open it up if he can hit his stride by conference play. I think if he can really get it going and just really learn these first couple weeks, that'll be a really big addition and another huge dynamic to this offense.
Josh, Kasim Hill really had probably his first real bad game as a player at Maryland. It just seemed like his timing was off. He was airmailing balls. He didn't feel comfortable in the pocket, even though he wasn't under a huge rush. What did you see with his play this week? And is there anything to take from it other than just being a freshman in a tough spot on the road?
Yeah, I think you summed it up pretty well. I mean, obviously, you can't deny that he wasn't the most accurate quarterback on Saturday. You know, he only completed eight of 16 passes for 121 yards and a touchdown. And that the one touchdown was mainly Davenport making a really ridiculous spin move and creating yards after the catch. But I'll go back to what I said last week. He didn't turn the ball over. And, you know, you can't count on a redshirt freshman to win every game or, you know, put the team on his back. And luckily, Maryland has the running backs where they can kind of simplify things for him. But again, he hasn't turned the ball over yet in his career. And it was rainy and the conditions weren't great against Bowling Green, which I'm sure played a factor in his accuracy. And he still took care of the ball. And the one time, which is no no small task, especially when you're at, when you're motioning guys and bringing guys around in the backfield. We've seen a couple of handoffs already get misplayed. Hill recovered one, and the one time that Piggy actually came in, he fumbled on the second play of the drive. So, you know, he is a redshirt freshman, and he's going to have struggles, but at the same time, you have to remember that he is a redshirt freshman and what he's doing and just taking care of the ball. He's basically doing everything that's asked for him, everything that he can kind of give you in the pass game, expand the vertical pass game. Obviously, he's going to have to do that as Big Ten play goes on, but he's doing basically everything that's been asked of him so far. And then just the passing on top of that is a bonus.
Yeah, it certainly seemed to me that Canada tried to get him in rhythm there at the end. The Davenport touchdown pass is actually an interesting one because it seemed at the end of the second half and then I guess the beginning of the third quarter before Maryland really just decided to run all over Bowling Green. They started throwing a lot of those kind of short crosses and things that you can kind of count on Kasim to hit the guy in stride and really let the athletes do the work for you. I wonder if that's a way they can go forward now, but I'm not sure that's going to work once they start getting further into the schedule.
Yeah, and that's what I was trying to get at. Where he's going to have to do more against Big Ten teams. They're going to have to open it up. He's going to have to connect on vertical routes. You know, so I mean, that's obviously something that you need him to progress as the season goes on. But, you know, I'll give him a pass for one game with the conditions, and he's a redshirt freshman, so he's going to have some games like this.
Right. It shouldn't be really too much to worry about at this point, at least. We'll have to talk about after next week because Temple's a not very good team, but you could have the weather. So how did we feel about the Piggy series there? I mean, obviously there was a fumble. I kind of feel like that was DJ Turner's fault and not Pegram's because it looked like he was just a feint and he wasn't supposed to get near the ball, but he did. And Kasim was really struggling at that point. So I didn't necessarily have a problem with bringing Pegram in at that point, but I know Jeff's going to yell at me about just having a two quarterbacks at all, right?
No, I'm not like vehemently opposed to the two quarterback system. It's just how often does it really thrive? You know, who's won a championship, even a conference championship, with two quarterbacks?
But I think Canada is doing a good job of using both quarterbacks and not creating a quarterback controversy out of it. Like, it's still clear that Kasim Hill is the starter.
Yeah. So
I think that's the difference here.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I wonder if once they get in the Big Ten play, I wouldn't be surprised if they start to phase that out some. But, yeah, I mean, I'm not totally against it. If it works, that's great. And with his offense as unpredictable and as it is, maybe it will work, but my whole thing is track record. You just haven't seen a lot of really good teams that did it.
Yeah. And him coming into the second quarter was pre-planned, and Canada said all week that he was going to play them both again. So it wasn't a matter of Kasim struggling and, you know, Canada losing faith at all. And Hill, I just think that was the plan all along.
So he was struggling. I mean, I think that struggling. I think the timing was actually pretty good to try and mix it up. If you were intending to do that at some point during the game and you weren't already up 35, that was probably not a terrible time.
Yeah, I agree with Paul. I thought that was perfect timing. The offense was in a rut. Why not switch it up with an explosive athlete? I like the decision.
Oh yeah, I was just saying that I think they planned that ahead of time. I wasn't saying it was a bad timing.
Right.
But I was curious whether this ends up being a thing that Canada has planned on doing early in the season, just kind of to get Piggy comfortable with his play calling and get him ready in case he's needed further down the line. But you'll see less of him coming in as a regular thing once you really get into conference play. Do we feel like that's the case, or is this kind of a, you know, we'll see what happens every week kind of deal?
I think there will be games and situations where Piggy's going to be useful, but I mean, Him only coming in that one series and then never playing again when most of the game was close against Bowling Green, I think that was kind of pretty telling. And, you know, he did the same thing against Texas. I mean, it's pretty clear that in crunch time, Hill's the guy. But I think Piggy's a good guy right around the second quarter, what Canada's been doing to kind of change the pace, maybe just even a series or two for the rest of the year.
All right. Let's talk about the defense. Jeff, defense was pretty good again. One kind of really craptastic drive where they let Bowling Green go right down the field, though I'm pretty sure without that Cowart penalty, it would have been a three and out. So pretty good marks across the board there.
Defense was really good. Absolutely shut them down in the second half. I don't know. Bowling Green couldn't have had more than, what, one or two first downs in the whole second half. I mean, they were just dominant. Obviously, you know, the Miller kid, I guess, went out for a while. And again, Maryland is just a physical mismatch. But through two games, they've been really stout. I think they've given up 2.5 yards per carry so far. I think they're second in the Big Ten in sacks. They've got, I think, 7 or 8 sacks already. So, yeah, I mean, the defense was really good. And, you know, let's temper the enthusiasm a little bit till we see them against a better offense. Maybe Texas was. They didn't really put up a lot of points against Tulsa this past week either. So everything kind of has that asterisk next to it. But defense has been really good.
Well, and remember, at the beginning of the season, we're not asking these guys to be the 85 Bears, you know. It's really just about when you've got a team that's got Maryland's type of offense, as we've seen so far, you just need to be, you know, comparable, right?
Yeah, and I mean, anything's the 85 Bears compared to what we've seen past right. years. But and they're,
it's
they're
on also, a scale.
They're also first in the Big Ten and third down defense so far also. So, so far, so good.
Yeah.
Useful. Let's talk about the defensive line, guys. Josh, what picked out for you? I mean, it looked like Cowart and Anna Bonham were having a field day, and they weren't blitzing all that often.
Yeah, I mean, 15 rushing yards pretty much tells the story there. Like you said, Cowart and Anna Bonham were really good. Adam McLean was eating up blockers inside. I mean, there's really not much to be critical there. You know, 15 rushing yards, like I said, it's pretty much, I think, pretty much tells the entire story.
Yeah, the linebackers played pretty well from what I could tell as well. Isaiah Davis had a sack or two, is all over the field. Maybe his best game as in a Terp uniform, Ahmed.
Definitely his best.
Yeah, that was his first 2 career sacks.
There you go.
Yeah. So I thought, you know, especially with the linebackers, Trey Watson had the game last week. He was really, definitely the better of the two. And this week it was Isaiah Davis. So I thought that was a good game for him to build some momentum.
Did we notice any newer guys get some playing time this week that hadn't before, other than maybe that last drive or so?
I noticed Jordan Mosley and Darrell Nechemi.
Allende got a interception at the end, right?
Not any others that come to mind. I think I saw Carlos Carrier out there as well.
Yeah, he was out there.
Yeah, well, like the full twos went out that last drive, I was pretty sure. Carrier and the whole new offensive line, Teron Hunt was out there, and that was cool. And then they just obviously marched right down the field like the ones did. Ahmed, Antoine Brooks Jr. was all over the place again. His second really big game for Maryland this year. At least one sack. Seemed like he was doing a lot of those delayed blitzes that we kind of made fun of last week, but was actually really effective this time. What do you make of him? I basically decided that he's Jabril Peppers.
Yeah, I mean, Antoine Brooks does what he does best. He was just kind of flying around the defense. Yeah, he finished with 4 total tackles, 1 tackle for loss, and then registered an assist on a sack. So, I mean, even though the stat line doesn't look like it's blowing up, Brooks is a guy that he can impact the game in so many ways. You know, obviously, he had the game-winning interception against Texas, so he can defend. One-on-one coverage, you know, that's an area of weakness for him. But Antoine Brooks, you know, what he does so well is blitzing off the edge, and his unique combination of size and his physicality and his athleticism, he's really able to provide a mismatch, and that's why he's able to just put so much pressure in the backfield, whether he gets to the quarterback or gets to the ball carrier or not. I mean, he's always the guy that the opposing offenses have to keep their eye on. He was no different against Bowling Green. Him and Cowart, I thought, and Isaiah Davis, they all really set the tone defensively, really stepping up big. But it was a good showing. But I still think the player of the game on defense was Isaiah Davis. Just that first sack, you know, just really set the tone for this defense, and was a theme for it throughout the game.
And Maryland's really going to need Isaiah to step up and be a player this year. I mean, we've talked before about how thin the linebacking core is on this team. I mean, they need that guy to really step up. And so far, it looks like he has.
Exactly. And we know that Trey Watson, he brings a lot of experience and he looks good. But Isaiah Davis is a guy that struggled with his open field tackling big time last year, struggled in coverage. He wasn't always making the best reads or the best cuts. But this is a really big game for him. So hopefully he can build some positive momentum off this.
I think that's right. It seems to me like Trey Watson has been, he's a fifth year graduate transfer. He's just going to be who he's going to be. He's a solid guy who's going to, kind of keep the ship afloat. But Isaiah seems to have that kind of inconsistency that happened before with Jermaine Carter, where one game you get the good version, the next game you get the bad version. If you get the good version of Isaiah Davis, most games I think this defense, especially the linebacker core, is going to be all right.
Yeah, they'll, and especially with the way the defensive line is playing and with the way they're capable of playing, a big year out of Isaiah Davis would go a long, long way for this defense.
Excellent. All right, guys, give me your players of the game, one offensive, one defensive, starting with Jeffrey.
Offensive, Ty Johnson. I'm still I feel like he looks bulkier than even last year when he looked bulkier than the year before. And he's lost a little bit of that burst that he has as a freshman. He doesn't seem quite as fast, and he looks noticeably thicker. That's a side note, but he obviously had a good game, 10 yards a carry, over 100 yards. And then Isaiah Davis, I have no idea where that came from. Last year, he struggled for most of the year. Like you guys said, if you can get that out of him or anywhere near that out of him, that's huge, because linebackers, probably the weakest spot on the entire roster.
Yeah, I'm with Jeff. I'm going with Ty Johnson. He probably gets taken for granted a lot just because, this is what he does. But 12 carries, 124 yards and a touchdown, 10 yards per carry. No need to overthink that one. And then Isaiah Davis, echo what everyone else has said. I think he's really good when he can play downhill, which he was able to do against Bowling Green. He's certainly an X factor moving forward.
For me on offense, I'm going to Tyon Fleet-Davis. I mean, statistically, he finished second in rushing yards to Ty Johnson, obviously. But 15 rushes, 102 rushing yards, two touchdowns. Especially in back-to-back games, is just like really kind of stepping up, and second game really improving off the first. I think he's been a great surprise for this offense. Again, we talked about his potential move to linebacker when he was coming out of high school. He's really shown he can be a great downhill runner, and he's improved. Before, he was just he wasn't really refined with his running. He just kind of plowed through everyone in high school and just kind of run that way. But now, he's doing a better job of just kind of seeing the offense. And you can kind of tell it's a little bit slowing down for him, and he knows exactly where to go and does a great job lowering his shoulder, plowing through his next guy, and absorbing the hit and chucking forward. I thought he did a really good job on Saturday.
Your offensive player of the game was Anthony McFarland, and not because he went to DeMatha, mm-hmm. but because every one of us that had to watch that ridiculous Snapchat commitment video deserved that kind of performance. And I know he's going to bring it every week. So good on you, kid. And obviously Isaiah Davis was a monster on defense. So let's not even bother arguing about that. Yeah. All right. Football recruiting. We got positive news in football recruiting. What's up with that? Ahmed, tell us about Treshawn Ward.
Yes, sir. Three-star running back out of Tampa Bay Tech. Down in Tampa, obviously. Treshawn Ward, he visited back in late July, right before the dead period. Big Chris Beattie guy, Maryland's ace recruiter. He's been he's been the backbone of Maryland's recruiting class. He's recruited over half the commits right now. But Ward, the biggest question was whether Maryland would take two running backs in the class. And, it kind of became clear that they were in a good spot for Ward when Jordan Houston was set to commit. Maryland did a really good job. But the way Ward and Houston fit Ward is more of an H-back kind of guy, and I think that in his highlight tape, he's a guy that he can make that one cut and he can go through. But his frame at 5'9", you can get him out of weight and still maintain that speed. So maybe the plan is to get him around 205, 210. Then Jordan Houston, you know, you put him – he's just like Anthony McFarland. Or if you follow high school very well, he's exactly like Blake Corum. And those two are identical running backs. You just put the ball in their hands and they make plays, whether it's the running game or the passing game. But I do think at the next level, Houston's more of the pass-catching running back, and Treshawn is just like Tayon Fleet Davis.
Yeah, you do suspect that given all the various components of Canada's offense, you can really move these guys around. You know, it's not like you have a lot of positional dependent guys out there. You got guys you can play some slot, guys you can play some H-back, guys you can line up in the backfield or on the wings. And I mean, he was doing some weird shit. I mean, just if you look at all the different formations and places that you got these guys lining up, you know, it's really about getting athletes on the field.
Yeah. But when you look at the current roster situation, Maryland really doesn't have a true H-back. And I really question if Jake Funk is a true H-back. I don't think, you know, I know he's bulked up and I know that he's just improved his body, he's improved his upper body strength. But I think he's still better suited at running back. And that just kind of shows Maryland doesn't really have the true H-back kind of guys. So that's why Ward's commitment was so big.
Man, I'd kill for one season of Kenny Goins under Canada. I feel like that just would have been a lot of fun. So, Ahmed, tell us what we got going on. What does the recruiting landscape look like at the moment? Has it improved at all?
Potentially. I mean, I spoke with one target. I'll have more on him tomorrow. But, you know, a lot of guys that I talk to, they're just kind of like, you know, I like Maryland. I have another guy told me he definitely still wants to take an official, but you know, they're still kind of in wait and see mode. For Treshawn Ward, you know, the big thing was Coach Beatty. You know, that they really hit it off. They really developed that trust, and it kind of went from there. I'm not saying that the other targets don't have that, but guys with options. You know, when you have Michigan State or you know, a handful of schools, Indiana recruiting you, you know, you're still going to evaluate all your options. And now kids are starting to take official visits. So I don't anticipate Maryland really hosting too many kids on game days. You know, outside of the commitments, it might just be a couple local kids, things like that. But, you know, we'll see what Saturday has in store.
Ahmed, let's look ahead a little bit. One way or another, Maryland's going to probably be parting company with DJ Durkin before too long. Let's imagine that happens within the next couple of weeks and Matt Canada is hired as head coach, keeps the current assistants around. Is that something that could really affect this year's class, or is this just a lost group of kids at this point and you're just trying to bail the water out?
Yeah, I think that would help. Assuming that Canada stays as head coach, and you know, I don't think it's realistic to say that every assistant is going to stay. I mean, there's always attrition in college football, you know, and especially sure. With the situation, you know, we'll see what happens. But
yeah. I just mean in that the intention would be
right.
To keep, you know, keep a Chris Beatty and make him your offensive coordinator, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah. I think it would help, and it would really provide a lot of just clarity and, just clarity. And then, you know, you have the parents that are going to have the most questions about trust. You know, can I still trust you guys? I mean, especially with the current, if the staff stays, they're going to be faced with questions. Well, why, what's changed from then now? What, like this happened, you were here. Why are you still here? Why should I trust you? And it's going to be, Maryland's always going to be facing that uphill battle with every single kid. And then when you start competing with just the Rutgers or the Temples, you know, with those things are going to be hard, especially for the 2019 and probably the 2020 class for this staff to kind of overcome. But, you know, I think Beatty as offensive coordinator, you know, I think elevating him to that spot, I think that's something that he would be interested in. I think that it would be a good fit. I know just being local, I think that would it just makes sense, so much sense for him. And that's why he took the job for Maryland 2 weeks after he took the Syracuse job. So he's We'll see. We'll see. But I think a lot of these guys are going to end up evaluating their options.
And let's be frank about it. How much does Maryland going, say, 8-4 this year affect that conversation?
I mean, honestly, I think you need to wait for the investigation and then go from there. Because I think what is going on is bigger than football. The wins and losses shouldn't really mean much.
Of course it shouldn't, but this is the real world, right? I mean, the biggest knock on the entire DMV to UMV UMD thing was the fact that Maryland has not won a significant amount of football games in a long, long time. If you see a program that, despite all the bullshit and all of the terribleness that's happened here, turn around and show that they can compete with the big boys in the Big Ten East, I'm just curious whether that starts to turn some heads that might not have otherwise looked in their direction before.
And you know what, I feel like Maryland fans, you know, they kind of have to look at Penn State and see exactly how they did it. You know, they for under James Franklin for the first 2 years, they really the first year and a half, they really didn't look too good. And then that Ohio State, that primetime game at home, that really turned it around for them. And if Maryland's able to get Ohio State, or if they're able to get Michigan State at home this year, you know, obviously that's a tall task. I mean, it's saying you're just going to go out there and beat Ohio State. Those are the kind of wins that you need to kind of turn some heads recruiting wise. But if Maryland's able to secure one of those big upsets, then yeah, it would go a long way, I think. It would show that Maryland can actually beat those big boys, because for the last 2 years, these guys have been coming to games where it's 66-3, 48-3, or whatever the Michigan score was last year. And it's all opposing teams fans. So you go 8-4, you beat some of these big teams, you show some more fan support locally. I think that'll really help, especially for the 2020 class, and that being so loaded.
All right. Good stuff, brother. We don't have a guest this week, but we've got a new segment we're going to drop here. Schwenk, hit me one time.
I'll ask 21 questions.
There we go. Question time, everyone.
Question time. Not quite the British Parliament, but close. So we asked the denizens of the InsideMarylandSports.com message boards to give us some questions they wanted to ask us. So we decided that we would let them basically drop some stuff on us, and then we'll see if we can answer these properly. All right. The first one here is, this one's going to Jeff. Jeffrey, would or should Michael Locksley be a candidate if Durkin is let go for the head coaching job?
Would or should? I will say, would he be a candidate? In so much as he'll be mentioned for the job, yeah. Will he be a serious candidate? You know, I still have a lot of questions about whether the school, you know, they're just going to be so squeamish at that point, given everything that's happened. And, you know, I think I've said it before on the show, it is somewhat ancient history. You know, you're talking 10 years ago or whatever, when all this stuff happened at New Mexico. But they're just going to be so risk averse at that point that
not in Maryland.
Yeah. No. I think, coming off everything that's happened with Jordan McNair and Durkin and all this, that I really have my doubts. I think he'll be mentioned. Should he be? I mean, he should be. You're not going to find a guy who knows more about the program, the area, you know, who actually cares about the school and can recruit the area as well as him. So he should be a candidate. But I just think that the lack of success as a head coach and what some people still see as being a volatile or potentially volatile individual is going to really limit his chances.
Yeah. And, you know, Mike Leach was going to be head coach here, but he said a bad word to Linda Clement once. So,
and he was a proven winner, and that wasn't after all this stuff that's happened.
Pretty much. So make whatever inferences you choose after that conversation. All right. Let's see. Who do I want to give this one to? Let's give this one to Joshua. Do the football, the impending, shall we say, football buyouts/shit show affect Mark Turgeon's situation going forward? Another coach who's not quite on the hot seat, but maybe a warming seat.
Yeah, Jeff might want to chime in here as well, but with everything going on, I mean, who knows how much Maryland's going to have to pay, how much all this whole thing is going to cost Maryland. It sounds like it could be up to $10 million. So with Turgeon's contract having no buyout, and he signed to 2023, I think this takes a little bit of pressure off him, just in the sense that, I mean, how are they going to afford to buy him out in the next couple of years? I think before this all happened, you were looking at maybe next year was when these talks could take place. But now I think the timeline might be set back another year or two.
Yeah, I think there's definitely something to that. Just the financial picture is so different than it was a few months ago when we all assumed if Turgeon doesn't go back to the tournament and maybe even, you know, do better than that, he might be done. It's a whole different landscape now, but it's impossible to answer. You don't know how things are going to unfold with football. You don't know, most importantly, how the season's going to go for him and who's going to be the athletic director. You know, if it's still Damon Evans or is it going to be somebody new who would prefer to have his own guy, as many of them would. So it's really hard not to cop out, but it's really hard to answer right now.
That's interesting to me because Maryland basketball just has money in a way that the other sports and athletic department just doesn't. Whenever Maryland basketball needs money, they come up with it. So I'm not entirely sure whether the whole situation will have changed, but certainly the athletic director scenario will be the big one, because I'm not sure where Damon Evans was on Turgeon, but I don't think he was the biggest fan in the world.
No, I don't think so.
But we'll see. All right, Ahmed, what are the best Terp NFL prospects and the most likely to leave early at this point?
I mean, obviously, Jesse Anabonham, outside of the seniors, Byron Coward's obviously most likely. Maybe Antoine Brooks, but, you know, I still think he needs another year. Just because I'm not really sure where he'll play at the next level, and where he'll be able to thrive at the next level. So maybe another year, kind of work on just defining a little bit more of a role and kind of going from there. But I think Byron Cowley, obviously, he's the number one guy that's most likely to leave. I think he really wanted a chance to kind of restart and go back to a school where he could just kind of get away from home. Refocus and then kind of prove himself. And he's been a huge leader for Maryland. He's very determined. He has a goal in mind. So I think with a good year from him, I think that he would be the number one guy. I don't really have anyone else that comes to mind.
Savage looks like a top 4 or 5 round pick right now to me. I don't know how well he'll test. I have no idea what his speed numbers are like, but he looks like a legit prospect.
Looks better than Sean Davis did his senior year, that's for damn sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Sean, I think Savage, I don't know. I mean, obviously Jesse Anabonham, I don't know. I'd be curious to see, because Jesse, I mean, he's looked good, but he hasn't looked great the first two games. I'd be curious to see where he kind of goes in the draft, but I could see Savage getting picked up late. I think he's a pretty good ball player.
I think the one other underclassman worth mentioning, one other junior that at least has the option to declare, like Ahmed said, I think Coward's the most likely to leave, followed by Brooks. But somebody else who's come on really strong this year is Tino Ellis, who, you know, has all the measurables, and, you know, he put together a really strong game against Texas. Bowling Green really didn't target him at all. So I think he's just a guy, and he's somebody that's going to keep improving because he came in as a wide receiver. So I could see NFL scouts really liking his potential.
You know, I love Brooks, but there's just no way he has a position in the NFL, right? I mean, I don't see it.
Well, yeah, he's a liability in pass, and like especially on deep balls. I mean, he gets beat quite often. I don't know.
That's the thing. He's just like another Jabril Peppers or Roy Williams who had that perfect position to play in college, but doesn't project quite as well in the NFL. But I mean, I think he can still, I think a good defensive coordinator can still make use as a, maybe just as a linebacker on the field on passing downs, third downs, special teams. Obviously the goal is for him to be able to transition to strong safety, but even if he doesn't do that, he's a guy who's probably competitive enough and just a good enough all around athlete that he should find his way on a 53-man roster and get drafted, I would think.
I certainly hope so. I just don't see him as a guy leaving early for that reason, basically. I'm also super selfish and want him to stay for next year. All right, so for the group, start with Jeff and Josh and Ahmed. Has anyone's preseason win total changed after the first two games?
Yeah, I think mine has. I was thinking 6. Now I'm thinking 7, and if everything falls right, maybe 8. You have to pull off an upset to get to 8. But I was thinking going into the season 5 or 6, and, you know, Texas obviously is a big, you know, that adds one to the total right there for most people. So I think that I'd bump it up to 7 now.
Yeah, I had the over under at 5, I think, heading in, and I would like to think I was on the 6 win side of that. But now I think just going through the schedule before the show, I think 7 wins looks like the most likely outcome if everybody stays healthy.
Yeah, I think Maryland's going to find a way to get to 6 wins. I think Temple, you know, they really struggled. I watched their game on Saturday, and I think that's
they're bad.
They're really bad. Like, that was horrendous, abysmal. But I think Maryland, I think the Bowling Green game, you know, a lot of people are going to say they're not a talented team, but we've already mentioned it, but it's just kind of the adversity and the fact that they were struggling for so long and on the road with a redshirt freshman quarterback. And again, given everything that's happened, they found a way to kind of dig deep and just really dominate. And I think that's the biggest takeaway for me. I think the Minnesota game is going to be the most telling, but I think I'm more optimistic they'll get to 6 wins now.
Yeah, I think we're all about the same boat. I mean, I was at 6 before. I think I was at 5.5 was the over-under. And I think it's less about beating Texas, really, than just the way that they've played so far and the fact that Michigan State, Michigan, and Penn State all look like games that are at least in the winnable, you know, they're at least not automatic losses like you might have thought with some lesser Terp teams. Ohio State, however, they look really good. But, you know, look, at this situation, I think 7's probably the new benchmark. And I think everyone would be pretty disappointed if they didn't make it there, barring some sort of, you know, the annual usual crazy injury and whatnot to the quarterbacks. Speaking of bad, how bad is Randy Edsall? I mean, he is so terrible at this. Boise State could have put up 1,000 yards against UConn on Saturday. Like, I'm actually shocked that they didn't.
Their first game wasn't much better at home against UCF. They are terrible. They look like it's the first year of his rebuild, even though it's the second year. This was all highly predictable. Them hiring him to come back was just, I mean, just an abominable decision. You know, he is the definition of a slightly below average, maybe even more than slightly. He's not a terrible coach, but you knew there was no upside there with him. I think they romanticized what he did bringing them up from FCS. I watched some of their first game.
And he rehired Joe Moorhead and Tony Orlando to be his coordinators.
Right. No, he's got a couple of Maryland guys. He's got Dunn, I guess. This is all John Dunn, who was with Maryland at Maryland with him as his offensive coordinator. But they are awful. I don't know if you even keep him past this year. I guess you have to. I have no idea. I don't remember what his contract is, how long it lasts.
Yeah, I think he might have been decent 10 years ago, 15 years ago. But the one thing about him is he just refuses to change and keeps, you know, a lot of the same guys around. He hasn't really adapted to the game. So I saw that he actually, this is kind of old news, but I saw he got a commitment from Brandon Ross and Jared Ross's younger brother. So he's still pulling the same guys.
Oh. Well, because he doesn't work outside of his circles, you know. He's so stubborn.
Yeah, remember he used to literally hire guys off the street who used to coach at UConn for him 10 years before. That was awesome.
Staff was so weak. Recruiting was so bad. I mean, that was at Maryland, his recruiting. Imagine being him and trying to get kids to UConn. Yeah. So that's a doomed hire if ever there was one.
Yeah, they've been outscored 118-24.
Nice.
Three games.
I can't believe they hired that fucking guy here. I'd probably put the program back 10 years. Like, even if Maryland wins a lot of games this year, you're still not going to put people on the stands because of the damage of what they did after firing Ralph and hiring Edsel. That's, yeah.
And who knows, as much as a lot of people hate on James Franklin, and there are some things that to be find very abrasive about him, if Kevin Anderson doesn't come in and make that move, James Franklin might be the coach at Maryland now. You know, that's not to say that he would be having the same level of success. But if, you know, that was all based on Anderson not wanting to keep Debbie Yao's head coach in waiting, right?
It's an interesting alternative history take. You know, I don't necessarily agree with that because there was so much friction between him and Ralph at the end, and he had a divided locker room with, you know, Ralph's guys and James's guys. And, you know, James wasn't a new thing here. He'd been around for a while, so I'm not sure he could have come in and immediately had the effect that he did, you know, recruiting-wise and PR-wise that he did at Penn State. But it's certainly not out of the question. I mean, I always thought that guy would be a way better head coach than he was an offensive coordinator. So
well, there's no question he would have been worlds better than Edsel.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I mean, look, we've had this discussion in various forms before. You know, when you're a program like Maryland and you're not going to pull these, you know, all-time great head coaches, most of the time you either need a guy with an offensive system that can, you know, kind of cheat for you a little bit by having a system that's super good and you can just plug guys into, or a guy who can really recruit. And, you know, we're seeing the effects now of kind of coming off a guy who could really recruit with a guy with a system. So maybe there's a correlation there to Maryland's current success. Maybe it turns into something for years to come. I don't know. But mid-level P5 programs certainly need to pick one and go with it. And picking the most milquetoast non-recruiter, non-genius head coach in Randy Edsel is not what you do.
Yeah, I saw a quote from him about one of their two blowout losses and about what was going wrong. And it was something about like guys aren't keeping their eye discipline or something like that. Like that was aside from being a total stiff of a coach and a recruiter, almost never see guys who are that reluctant to take any blame, who will just throw those kids under the bus at every turn of the way. That was maybe the biggest turnoff about him aside from all the losing.
God, that's so good.
But this is also coming from a place of bitterness as a web publisher who spent 5 years trying to generate interest in his product. So you have to keep that in mind when provided
no access or content whatsoever, which is most beautiful thing.
And that,
yeah, it's hard to be, you know, if you want to be an arrogant prick, be good at something.
You better be good. Doing that.
All right, whatever. Screw that guy. All right. Thanks for the questions, guys. We'll do this as often as we can because we like to kind of keep it current. We don't have the chat room like we used to with the live broadcast, but we want to make sure that we're answering your questions and we're getting to the stuff that you guys want to know. Also, little housekeeping. Big ups to Monarch Terp on the IMS message boards for that free streaming of the Bowling Green game. Congratulations. I don't know who you are or what your real name is, but you can tell your family you are an internet hero. All right. due to contractual obligations, we must discuss Maryland basketball. Josh, I am told that the schedule is out with the TV times, and there are a lot of weekday 6:30 starts, which gets my blood boiling. Talk to me.
Yeah, four of them to be exact. Four weekday conference home games, 6:30. Obviously, fans don't really like that. It's pretty impossible if you get off at 5 o'clock and live outside of College Park to make it on time for those games. And some of those games, one of them is against Purdue, so that will probably be a big game. Nebraska, Northwestern, Minnesota. Only one 9 p.m. home tip, which will be against Wisconsin. So, I mean, if you're somebody that likes to get to bed early, I guess you like the schedule, but it seems like mostly a lot of complaints.
Yes, including me, because I don't know how the hell I'm supposed to get from work to the bar and have like 13 beers before being force-fed Maryland basketball and get there by 6:30. Why is nobody thinking of me?
Start drinking at work.
Oh, I'm going to have to. I mean,
I'll take that advice as well.
Yeah, there you go. See, you got to get that written into the contract, Josh.
I think it's done now. Jeff said it's okay.
or his mumbling in the background is this just an acceptance of how it's going to work?
Yeah.
That's all right.
Can't Maybe be a double standard. You can drink at work and I can't.
I agree. See? Freedom. All right. Also, due to contractual obligations, IMS Radio is brought to you in part by the Old Lion Tailgating Club, the unofficial booster club of Maryland football. They offer catered tailgates to every game to raise money to send local youth to Maryland football games. It's a great group, lots of good people. If you're going to give your money away, don't give it to the morons at Maryland. Give it to these guys. They're doing good stuff. You can join or donate today at www.oldlineclub.com. Guys, what have I forgotten? What do we need to get into that I have not brought up so far? Anything?
I think we got it. I can't think of anything. Josh? Oh,
the only thing left on the docket is whatever. So,
the non-ref sports.
To be fair to me, whatever is actually listed on the show outline. Thank you. We're not talking about non-revs. We already talked about Maryland basketball. That's a non-rev right now. So I'm sure there are other things going on. We're not going to talk about them. Sorry. If you want them talked about, maybe you should have gone on the InsideMarylandSports.com message board and asked a question about a non-rev. And then maybe, but probably not, it would have made it into the question segment.
You guys want to hear about my fantasy football team for a while?
Oh, yes, man. I love that. God, I love everyone's Facebook feeds at like 5 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon.
It's so funny because when you're telling other people about yours, it really does feel it's like your kids. It feels like it's compelling when you're telling somebody else. As soon as they start talking about theirs, you just glaze over.
Oh, yeah. It's like, you know, talking about your baseball cards or something.
Yeah.
Like, man,
big game from Jay Ajayi. That's really good, man. Tell me more about it.
Yeah, did you check out the new Beckett? My Cal Ripken rookie's up to $35. So sweet. I got a near mint condition one. It's good. Yes, we will not discuss fantasy football, even though Aaron Rodgers is a god. What we will discuss before we get out of here is Mr. Schwenk is getting married for some reason. You're going to have to explain this to me, buddy.
Well, they were the last things I basically read from the outside world where your email being like, you're going on a bachelor party. Why are you doing that? Don't do that. Just stop where you are, turn around, that sort of thing. But
no, that is definitely not what I said. I said, what's up with the wedding? The bachelor party's cool. Why am I not invited?
It was a bit of a tight squeeze. I told you guys earlier we had 18 people. I actually recounted it here. We had a grand total of 20 people in this house, so it was definitely like a party flop house. One of the guys, he knows someone who has a house on the same street we were staying in Bethany Beach, and they were like, oh, yep, that's party house. People are in there all the time. So we had a good time, stayed at Bethany Thursday to Sunday. Just kind of chilled, did some beach stuff on Thursday. Eventually we went out and Dewey on Friday. My younger brother got kicked out of the bar from juuling too much on the dance floor. The DJ kept coming on.
Is that a thing? Is that a thing?
Juuling, the like the e-cigarettes that look like flash drives.
I thought you said drooling.
Oh, no, that would have been way funnier.
Dog or something.
I was like, how did they catch him?
You guys are old.
Yeah.
So he's juuling on the dance floor, and the DJ, they're really nice at Starboard. They like try their best not to kick you out like immediately. Like they do it at Secrets, they'll just drag you out, no questions asked. But the DJ is on the mic pleading, like, please, man, stop juuling in here. And then he decides to one up himself by ripping his shirt off. And at that point, we were like, okay, you've had enough, young man. Let's go home.
Question answered.
I like the cut of your brother's jib.
Yeah, he might have been the MVP of the weekend. But
also not mentioned, one of the 20 dudes in the house is one Gary Williams.
Yeah, Gary swung by. You know, he's got a place nearby. So anytime I go to the beach, I always hit up Gary. You know how it is. We're tight.
Well, I know Gary likes to bro it up with some bros. You know.
Oh yeah,
broing it up in the party house. I mean, 20 dudes in one house sounds like a pretty disgusting scenario to me, to be honest.
It wasn't. Yeah, it was pretty gross. I mean, just Friday morning. I mean, not even everyone hadn't even been there all night, but Friday morning I like went outside for a little bit and came back in and I was like, oh, this just smells foul in here. But we managed to slog through, you know, even with a little bit of Secrets grime on us from Saturday. This will shock no one though. We had the best of intentions to try and watch the Maryland game. But you know, a couple hours at Secrets, then you're talking about, you know, dragging everyone home, pulling out some wires, sitting in front of a computer. It didn't happen. So a shout out to Monarch Terp again for putting that replay on the board there. That's why you should, if you don't subscribe to IMS, this is it, you guys, this is it.
Yeah. Free bootleg, illegal video stream.
You don't even have to look that hard. That's right. It's great.
We support it 100%.
Hey, Jeff, so you don't have to pay ESPN Plus. See, you're paying somebody. Pay Jeff, not the big corporation.
Absolutely. We can all get behind that.
All right, guys. Good stuff. Schwenke, get the last word. What do you got for me?
I just want to say that upon a rewatch yesterday, or my initial watch of the game, I was just kind of surprised that even like in the first half and into the third quarter, you know, when things weren't going right for Maryland, I never really felt like the complete dejection that I've felt in years past when things aren't going right for Maryland. On offense, like, okay, there was some good stuff going on. You know, the running game looked solid. You know, on defense, they, again, apart from that one disastrous drive that they gave up, like, they looked good. So it was just a weird thing to go through this game and be like, okay, they gotta break through at some point. Like, Bowling Green is not taking this game away from them, and they're gonna do it, and they did, and that was kind of a miraculous thing to kind of see through here. So on to Temple and on to 3-0.
Yeah, it was interesting. I think a lot of people were kind of envisioning that doomsday scenario on the road against a shitty team where you just can't quite ever get it going enough and you end up losing. I'm not sure I ever felt like it was going that badly because I guess it would be really hard to have 40 penalties in a game. I mean, if anybody could do it, it would be Maryland. But, you know, it did feel in a way, even though the parts of the team were struggling, especially on offense, that they were going to find a way to get through it. And they definitely did. So onward and upwards, right? Okay, guys. Thanks for listening. It's been another week of IMS Radio. We are here. We typically record Monday nights, try and get it out to you on Tuesday mornings for the drive-by. Please check us out on Facebook, on Twitter, on, I don't know, I'm sure there's others, but I should probably have a list by now, but I don't. But you should check us on those places, and then we'll point it to the other places. We will see you next time, IMS Radio. See you later.